gays to teach or hold government positions. Gus Van Sant, Danny Goldberg, and Mike Quinn and Chris Monologues from Monkey Present decided to put a concert together, an outdoor show, and try to bring awareness to the youth, groups of people, you know, and Helmet was there, the band Helmet, which is a metal band. Calamity Jane, local artist, Calamity Jane, local artist, Poison Idea punk band, legendary punk band Poison Idea. Nirvana, kind of solidify it, you know, bring it to a national attention. With Nirvana having that, bringing it to a national attention. So the focus of the film is not Nirvana. The focus of the film is the concert, how everybody came together and put this together to fight this. And a group of people with their wits and everything did this together in Portland.
Let me ask each of you, what is your role in the project?
I'll start. I'm Jeff Crawford. I am the director and executive producer.
Jennifer Harris, and I'm also an executive producer.
All right.
And, of course, I'm Mike Lastra, and I'm involved in the production, you know, some director photography a little bit here and there, some camera work, maybe some editing, you know, just kind of the technical support.
It sounds like you're reaching for a slice of history. Talk a little bit more about your approach.
It's a slice of history 25 years ago, and nowhere else. Where else has this happened 25 years ago with a concert like this? Nowhere, you know. And that was one of our main questions we were asking the people we interview. And I think now this slice of history needs to be brought up now. And when making this, why we're with these things are developing in the election. These things are developing in the South with, like I said, with Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina. And these are things are still developing, you know, that and so, like, going back to the concert, how everybody came together, like, with the wits, everybody with their own wits, and do it yourself. I'm going to do this. I have the camera. This guy has the sound equipment. How everybody pulls things together, and this is on a larger level.
And they're stopping concerts from happening because of this. And here a concert was made, you know, to prevent the exact thing that they're fighting. So it's just it's something that I feel is uniquely Portland. But I think other people might feel differently, but I don't see where else this could have happened in 1992. And I look around and I don't see it. Maybe in some of the big cities, you know, and stuff. But, you know, back then, Portland, no one really thought about it. Everybody, you know, just I just think it's uniquely Portland. I just want to say that. In fact, there was, you know, there was an interview with the band, with Nirvana, and they had said, I think it was Kurt said that, you know, there is a Seattle scene going on, but it's not in Seattle, it's in Portland. And I felt that, and being back here, it seems that appropriate. That's just...
And I just think, you know, like, with the bands coming together and playing for this, and the diversity of the crowd. The diversity was such a diverse crowd, and everybody was pretty well behaved, and nothing, no hiccups at all. And I don't think you would see that anywhere else now, right now.
What was the concert called?
The Concert Against Hate.
If it had a name.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the funny thing, you had these, you know, Farm Aids and Band-Aid, you know, that kind of, in some ways, was a prototype, in some ways, of what happened here, you know, even though it wasn't, you know, the same organizational pipeline. But the fact is that people coming together in some large number to support, either with their dollar or by their appearance, does send a message, I think.
So was it a fundraiser? Was it a fundraiser for organizations? I'm still a little in the dark about this event specifically. I'm just reaching for it. You know, my head is in the middle of all these things. And so, were you there?
Yes.
All right.
I was too.
Talk about how you heard about this show and what made you want to go, and then what it was like when you were there.
My involvement, I did a show called Bohemia After Dark, that was on Fox 49 in the 90s. And then we did alternative music and funk rock, rap music mixed together. And that's a little bit of political. We kind of throw political tones in the show. And they had no VJ. There's no person going, hey, this is the video. But and then so usually the if we had a VJ, it would be a band. You know, like here's, and they pick the videos or anyways. But that's how I got involved. And we've been trying to get an interview with Nirvana forever. And then, like, the we were there to interview Jello Biafra. He was the MC. And we're in the middle of a field waiting for Jello to do the interview. Mike's shooting. I think he was out there shooting. And a guy with a big bump on his head and came up to me with David Parks from Hitting Birth and said, hey, remember us? I went, no. I went, who are you? And it was Chris Novoselic from Nirvana, the bass player. And he was going, hey, come and interview us. Remember you helped us out here in we did a show in Phoenix in 1990 and Nirvana played. And it was the middle of July in this nightclub called Mason Jar. And it was 130 degrees inside. Only 20 people showed up. And it was Tad, Mudhoney, and Nirvana, and Tad was headlining. But anyways, I had to take money out of my own pocket to give them gas money. They remembered that, you know. Hey, you remember doing that? Yeah, so that's how we, like, and then plus David Parks say, hey, these guys got a show. And that's how we got the interview. Then the whole interview was them talking about MTV, where they were forced to play Smells Like Teen Spirit on the MTV Awards that night before. And they hated playing the song. And then that was the whole interview, how they hated the industry. But they had to play the song because if they didn't, some people would have been fired. And so, and then Kurt Cobain was talking about how this could happen anywhere. These type of things could happen anywhere. So that's my involvement. And so I was there to shoot an interview with Jello. We did get an interview with Jello. We went to Mike's studio and shot it later on that night, everything. But it wasn't even planned to get the interview at all.
It was an amazing time that everyone kind of came together for this goal, you know, how things sometimes just blossom out of the blue, you know what I mean? Everyone kind of knew that the issue was an important one. And most of the musicians, you know, even though we're poor out there sometimes in the world, people talk about this stuff. And in general, I think they're very tolerant people, you know, and we wanted to send a message.
I have a Portland memory from the early 90s. So, Bohemia After Dark, that was on Community Media Access.
Yeah, in the beginning.
Yeah, remember Rasta in a Babylon?
Yeah.
Dave Park, Steven Spirit. I'm going to miss him forever.
Yeah.
And so what I feel coming from you is this sense of not just this moment in history and this movement, which is coming back around, but a sense of, in a way, almost what we've lost in Portland. Right?
Exactly.
I hear you kind of reaching towards, can we recreate it?
I just want to, you know, show people this is what we did, and we did it with us, and we didn't have to have big money to come in and do it. Nirvana came in and solidified it. We were going to do the show anyways. The show was going to happen. It didn't need Nirvana, but then when Nirvana came, it made it national and made it everybody knew at that point.
Yes, MTV even carried it on their news the next day. So it was, you know, got national coverage.
I have to take that in. I have to take that in. I miss those days. And we are often talking about how it was the artists and the grassroots communities that made this town so cool, that made all the people move here, that now no one can afford to move here anymore. And there's a sadness there, but let me shift gears a little bit. So that means you've got a lot of footage that you took from, let's see, my daughter was born in 1992. I think she's maybe 22 or 23. She keeps changing ages. What's that about? So talk about the images and the video and the sound that you have to weave into this effort.
Well, it was, since we knew it was going to be a significant event, and I was in contact with Jello and Poison Idea. I had already came out with camera and equipment to capture that. And as it turned out, in the long run, apparently there was nothing we couldn't tape. And so Nirvana came on stage and Cobain made some interesting statements that we have captured and spoke his mind about what he thought and kind of challenged the crowd to, you know, use their brains a little bit rather than just scream rock and roll, you know. And so we have quite a bit of footage of Jello as the MC speaking and several of the bands, Calamity Jane, a little bit of them. And as I remember, even Channel 6 was out there shooting footage. So I suspect it was on the news that evening, although I was too involved with what I was doing to check it. So, but it was, so we have sufficient coverage of, you know, what it was like, and it didn't rain.
And MTV was there, of course, so because of Nirvana being there, and so, but you know, it's just, I just think with everybody, yeah, it is a sad moment thinking about it when you reflect on it, you know, like where we're at right now, and you're talking about how no one could afford to live here anymore, you know, it's wrong, you know, and. Everybody reflect on that. Like, see this film. I think when everybody sees it, have an understanding, like, we lost something. And maybe we can regain this somehow. We still have each other. We're still here. We just got to get together again.
Jello Biafra, don't hate the media, become the media. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, okay, again, for all the people, the thousands of people that just moved to our metro area within the past 10 minutes and all the young people, can we just talk briefly about 1992? Were we all walking around with cell phones or was that just Mulvey and Scully? What, talk a little bit about 1992 and how it's different from now. Can you do that?
Well, technology, you know, computers were still pretty young and it wasn't, I don't think that was the main organizing tool as it is today. Which, you know, people kind of forget. Technology was coming along, and here in Portland, our music scene was really vibrant. I mean, there were labels looking around to sign bands and signing bands. Tim Kerr Records was king still, and they were represented there at the concert with, I think his name is, XJ Elliott was there in person. And it was... It was a time where, you know how things go in cycles and growth spurts? I think it was a real optimistic time because there were these bands and we had national attention for whatever that was, good or bad. And so it was a time to spread our wings.
Jennifer Harris, Mike Lastra, and Jeff Crawford, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the One Love World Music Party Cruise, Friday, May 27th on the Portland Spirit. Boarding takes place at 10:30 p.m. The One Love World Music Party Cruise features Portland reggae band Roots Revolution and DJ Solo Afrikaan and Della playing a mix of reggae, salsa, highlife, afrobeat, dancehall, R&B, hip-hop, reggaeton, funk, and more. This is a 21 and over event. Again, that's the One Love World Music Party Cruise, Friday, May 27th on the Portland Spirit. Boarding takes place at 10:30 p.m. on the west side of the Willamette River by the Salmon Street Fountain. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Historian Joseph Reif talks about a statement by white clergy in Mississippi in 1962 in response to racism.
One of the things the church has to decide is what's the difference between being the church and protecting the institution of the church.
Born of Conviction on Progressive Spirit. Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, the program of, by, and for working people. Your hosts for the show tonight are myself, Jamie Partridge, and John Walsh.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey. And our guests tonight are Elise Fischel, Jordan Vandering, Ivy Fleek, and Olivia, who all work for Burgerville, recently helped form the Burgerville Workers Union. Thank you all for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So to get started, can you tell us a bit about Burgerville? It's a fast food restaurant, we know, but about how many locations, how many workers, where are they located?
Yeah, they're mostly located in, they're only located in the Northwest in Oregon and Washington. There are 42 locations, most of them in the Portland metro area, although there are some further out, places such as Corvallis. And there are, from our estimations, about 1,000 workers in all those 42 stores.
So this is a local chain in Oregon, in Southwest Washington. And so tell us what kind of work you and the others on the job do at Burgerville. What kind of work is it?
I work drive-through. So I open drive-through. So I spend about the first half of my day doing mostly prep and then working the window as well as the counter. And the second half of my day just working the window during the lunch rush. Then I go home.
I work drive-through and counter. I mostly close drive-through and I pre-close counter. So I do all the cleaning and organizing.
I'm usually Jordan's second window, so he's taking my orders for me, cashing them out, and I'm getting all their food for him, making all the drinks, running back and forth in circles.